everyone.
Welcome to another episode of Whole Nine Yards.
The station from whence cometh the big kahuna soon. So this is all about...
spookiness some more.
Spooky more, idioms.
More spookiness.
Yes, because we're, indulging the Halloween season.
The spirit of the season.
That from the last time we had a conundrum about whether or not the Halloween season was strictly in the United States or if it was pervasive globally, we still have not
it has invaded you.
Researched to learn.
Yes.
That's because we're doing them all the same.
Yeah, this is only 5 minutes later.
Yeah, so we know as little as we knew then.
We still don't know anything because it was just a minute ago.
Or 30.
Yeah, whatever, minutes. Yeah. You know. Yes.
I know.
So spooky season.
Yeah, spooky season.
Yeah.
And I'll start us out if you don't mind.
I don't mind one bit. What's your spooky word?
I'm going to do it. I think you put a little tremolo in it or something. That makes it scarier.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
Because that's how ghosts talk.
Why though?
Now we're talking in circles.
Okay.
Because they're spooky.
You can't define a thing with a thing. All right, I have skeletons in the closet.
Skeletons in the closet. Yeah, sure. I mean,
it's written on my sheet is singular skeleton.
Oh, just a single one. Nice.
If you got one, you got two, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So if I say, hey, Ray, what skeletons are in your closet or something like that? You know, what's that mean?
It means you want to know my clandestine secrets.
Isn't that redundant?
Yes. Yeah. It means you'd like to know what I've got hidden in my old closet.
Which sort of maybe shameful or dark.
Sure.
Secrets.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Whew.
Yeah.
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 Things you'd prefer to keep clandestine.
That's why, yeah.
That's why they're in the closet.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I get you.
Now, I'm literally, so...
You're interrupting me, stop.
Oh, yeah. And here's another one that kept coming up. No, I mean, it keeps coming up. And I haven't brought it up for our topic list because it seems like it's obvious. But, man, people use this a lot to say something was coined. You know, so-and-so coined this phrase. Mm-hmm. And you go, why are you saying that? But, I mean, I guess it's minted like you turned it from a nebulous, melty metal into a solid coinage.
Yeah.
Like you minted it, right?
Right.
And now it's distributed to the peoples.
They're spending it.
Yeah. So that was just an aside. It was like a free one.
Yeah. With no research.
None at all. So,
thanks for listening to Off the Top Idioms.
This idea of skeleton in the closet mm-hmm. started in the 19th century. It was in England. And being that it started in England has a funny sort of twist to it all on its own.
Okay.
You know, because it is... a skeleton in the cupboard, if you're in England.
Okay.
Although it wasn't always, it was indeed skeleton in the closet initially. Now, there are people that, you know, like to speculate that because the water closet, you know, after Sir John Harrington, mm-hmm. we know so well, invented that thing. The Queen loved it.
The flap.
Yeah, with the flap and everything. After that,
yeah.
And even in that, I believe, he takes a box or a closet or a high area to put the water so that gravity flushes down. So sure. He created, and others all around then, the water closet.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that believe that because closet became so tied up with this facility of removing waste.
Pooping.
Yeah. that they moved away from that. Nobody wanted to say that. Remember there was sort of shame around the toilets and I couldn't understand, like, why wouldn't you embrace this? This is great.
It's new. Yeah, you'd be like, this is way better than the other thing we had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we're embarrassed by our modesty is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Antiquated notions of modesty.
Destroying.
Come on, guys.
But in this case, it didn't destroy much. They just stopped calling it closet and switched to cupboard.
Water cupboard?
Yeah. Skeleton in the cupboard.
Oh, I see. Because the closet had the connotation of the the pooping.
Right, so they didn't want, what's all in there? Skeletons and the stuff of which we don't speak? You know, so they had some differentiation there.
Sure. You got the water closet, you got the skeleton closet.
It's just too many closets.
Yeah, come on, we can't afford this house.
So 1816, in this, man, I guess I'm just not reading the right things these days because I don't come across the titles like we come across in our research for stuff that people used to have. 1815, 1816, a philosophical treatise on the hereditary peculiarities of the human race by Joseph Adams.
All right.
Yeah.
Mr. Adams.
And this was in a subdivision of that in the Eclectic Review, November 1816. So two great sources of distress are the danger of contagion. I'm sorry, this is the quote.
Okay.
Two great sources of distress are the danger of contagion and the apprehension of hereditary diseases, the dread of being the cause of misery to posterity has prevailed over men to conceal the skeleton in the closet. Oh. So there's some, you know, and I always think about this too, you know, any time, just regular sickness, we talk about this, you know, a regular ailment or an infection, you know, you go, man, if I was in 1816 and I got this, I'm dead.
You'd be dead.
Just dead.
Yeah.
But now, I get some, you know, tetracycline. I'm back on the horse tomorrow.
Yeah. Cuts heal. You have bandages. Yeah. You can suture things easily. Yeah.
So, but our friend, Mr. Adams, was talking about, naturally, he didn't have that. So men feared anything.
Huh.
And it sounds like especially that it would kill their ability to procreate, any kind of stuff was dread.
Yeah.
And that dread or the result of that dread being likened to a skeleton in a closet. And that is an early 1816, I'm going to say for the ninth time.
1816. 16.
Yeah.
That's kind of pretty. That's a beautiful use. I don't know, in the genealogical sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, I don't know a lot about Edgar Allan Poe, but it's almost as if he read that thing. You think in his, quest for morbidity, that he would read, medical journals or medical publications or something maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it is not until 1845 that Poe uses it, and it appears in print. Yada, yada, yada. I rapped heavily upon that very portion of the brickwork behind which stood the corpse of the wife of my bosom. The wall fell bodily. The corpse, already greatly decayed, stood erect before the eyes of the spectators. Right?
Nice, yeah.
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 So that's 1845. Now, he doesn't say skeleton in the closet, but he says he tore down a wall and a skeleton was standing there, basically.
Was behind there.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And so, later that same year, another writer, with whom you might be greatly familiar or not, William Makepeace Thackeray.
Oh, sure.
So he just says it then. He referred to a skeleton in every house, and later on, in 1854, as a piece of it, some particulars regarding the Newcomb family, which will show us that they have a skeleton or two in their closets, as well as their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So many that analyze, compare, theorize, and sit around and stew about this sort of thing feel confident that Thackeray had read Poe and embraced this and folded it into his imagination and regurgitated it with greater vigor and more color and form.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, it now embodies that figurative sense of shame. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas earlier with the Poe reference, it was more just a morbid curiosity of sorts, you know, or, you know, a frightening morbidity.
Yeah, it was meant to scare.
Yeah.
Versus hide. I would imagine I would read medical journals and stuff if I were writing about things like that.
Yeah, right? You'd expect, you know, because you want to add truth.
Right.
And,
that's what makes the story.
Believability right. to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it adds the depth and the knowledge to the prose.
So there are also a group of folk out there who suggest nay.
Nay, nay.
So they say it came from this other sort of underground business, this exchange of cadavers,
mm-hmm.
and grave robbing and that sort of thing. So you'd you'd go steal a corpse.
Yep.
And you'd literally have to keep them in the closet.
That's awesome.
So
I can't. I got some skeletons in my closet, guys. I can't let you in. Sorry.
Yeah, we thought you're Sir John Harrington had overflowed, but no, okay, I get it why your place is reeking.
So
imagine that they're in there, right?
Yeah.
Although, like many things, there are no printed or reference to trace it back or to connect it to body snatching. No one in the body snatching documenting or trading world that documented such things.
Say like, yeah, we definitely did that.
Ever said,
right?
Skeleton in the closet.
Come on, grave robbers.
There were plenty of instances that I uncovered of this sort of morbid thing because of shame. So this is also sort of one and the other that actually feels like it ties everything together kind of in a real way. In that it seems to have been a habit because as centuries would go on and people would dismantle old houses, they would find skeletons, not in the closets mm-hmm. so much, but in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
But in these instances, they are often of babies, you know, so
God.
I really mean to say like miscarriages, fetuses. But, you know, in the sad truth of the world, this happens, you know.
Yeah, mortality rate.
But there's no shame in it. I never understood any sense of why is it shameful, though. But I would recognize that people felt that way or in the past did. Shouldn't I go down this road?
No. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I'm just like, wow, yeah.
So.
Damn.
You would hide it.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow. Yeah.
And therefore, it sort of jumps across that line. It becomes a skeleton, be it in the wall or the
right.
closet, you know, where you put it in a box and not
right.
speak of it. But it is a strong, direct correlation to all of it that connects both the metaphor and the shame.
The actuality of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though, again, I don't understand the shame, but I recognize that it is or was there.
The time of the, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Woo. Yeah. Okay.
So sorry.
No, I mean, that's how they go. They go places on you.
It can also be, you know, the Bates Motel woman. And she's just scary.
She's just scary.
And it's just weird.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just hanging out in that root cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is Skeleton in the Closet. Da, nice. Da, da.
Well, like a bat out of hell, I'll be gone when the morning comes. When the night is over, like a bat out of hell, I'll be gone, gone, gone.
Am I supposed to know this? Is this AC/DC or something?
No, it's Bat Out of the Hell.
What is it?
By Meatloaf, the song.
Oh, Meatloaf.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Am I supposed to know it? You know,
yeah, that's my phrase.
Okay, yes.
Bat Out of Hell.
I gathered that.
Sure.
I just recognized it was a song or something I was supposed to know.
Yeah.
Not being the, you don't have the dashboard light thing or something. I was not a big Meatloaf guy.
Well, really? I mean, not that, I'm not saying really as in a surprise way. This, all right, we'll back up first of all.
I always saw you as a Meatloaf
not
guy.
Not that. I just, it was, it sold 43 million copies worldwide and it's certified 4 times platinum.
There's some pop culture things that just went right by me.
Produced by Todd Rundgren.
Huh.
1977.
Yeah, and you know...
It's like a rock opera kind of thing.
Bad out of hell.
Yeah, so I get that it's maybe not... but it's apparently like one of the most popular albums in the world.
In the world.
Yeah. 43 million copies worldwide. That's a lot, I guess. I mean, it's gone 14 platinum, it says. It said, the Wikipedia said that it was very popular.
I mean, I see Skrillex songs with 4 billion YouTube downloads. I mean, I don't know what's popular and what's not. I don't understand.
How do you rate the 1977 Billboard versus the current Billboard?
I know.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. Bad Out of Hell. What would you say if I said that I was like a bat out of hell? I'll be gone when the morning comes.
I just think of it as fast.
Yeah,
that's all.
Moving very fast indeed.
Yeah,
so I have here. Yeah, exactly. Christine Ammer of she's a friend of the pod, the American Dictionary or the American Heritage Dictionary of Idioms. She comes up a lot. This book comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Would have us believe that the expression arose in the Air Force during World War I, kind of linked to fighter pilots, to just like they fly and they're a mammal in a plane. So what is another flying mammal is a bat.
Oh, and because that was new, that was the beginning of the aeroplane.
Yeah.
I guess it seemed fast to them. No, I think we could run as fast.
We could outrun those first ones for sure.
Yeah, this bicycle.
But the
yeah. Penny farthing.
Definitely penny farthing. But the phrase predates the World War I. So, I don't know. There's a 1922 quotation from the OED in a story called Three Soldiers by Jay Passos. We went like a bat out of hell along a good state road. That's after World War II, so that doesn't really count for before World War II. But the ones that I have from before.
That's handy.
Wow. 1895.
This'll do us.
Yeah, that'll be pre. Washington, D.C. Evening Star. Someone's just telling a story about seeing what you see on the prairie, wagons being done. And the quote is, I saw a characteristic scene, toiling up the terrible grade. One horse on the cook's wagon gave out, and 4 of the cowboys hitched their lariats to the pole and jerked the wagon up the gulch like a bat out of hell. As one man graphically put it, this is the end of that quote. 1895 was that one. There's another 1900s quote. In a 1905 American Dialect Society writing, they say that once all the bats were confined in hell, they still have wings like the devil. One day, someone left the gate open, and they quickly darted out and escaped to Earth.
What?
This is the American Dialect Society. That's why we say that. But if you keep digging back, I mean, there's Aristophanes around the 414 year.
Yeah, I had that guy once. Yeah, it was sure. A tricky name.
The Birds. He references a character, Caiaphron. Caiaphron?
Yeah,
I mean it's because the bat is Chiroptera, so it's kind of like that. Chiraphon.
All right.
He's not a bat from hell, but apparently in this story, The Birds, Aristophanes uses him as a bat from hell. So we get introduced from a hell bat.
Yeah.
So it was 414 when he referenced the bats from hell.
Yeah.
But like where you're digging into and stuff, this is, seemingly just our idea of spooky supernatural lore that we like to put on stuff. There's no really definition of why we think bats are from hell specifically, beyond like bats live in caves and caves are underground and hell is underground. So bats live in hell. Bats are associated with vampires and vampires are evil.
I mean, bats are great. So I never really liked this, all the associations of their negativity.
It's a part of our lore.
And they
our
eat mosquitoes. What's better than something that gets rid of mosquitoes for
seriously,
you?
We get introduced to the idea of a hell bat as early back, and I'm assuming even farther back than 414. But then pretty much nothing happens, and then Meatloaf does that album, and then bam, it is off to the races.
So it's Aristophanes to Meatloaf?
Pretty much. The American Heritage Dictionary of Idioms says World War I, but I gotta say that there's evidence that that's not the case.
Well, I mean, there's lots of homework for everyone to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, language. It's hard to find those first uses, and then generally they're spoken, and then how do you trace that? Exactly.
Exactly. That was a rhetorical question.
It was. Like a bat out of hell, my research on this is gone, gone, gone.
Like Gordon Gano's love. All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what isn't gone?
Nah.
Boy, people are going to get sick of these
setups.
They're
definitely going to...
Support Whole Nine Yards and make your life easier with Instacart. Online grocery shopping made simple. Instacart connects you with personal shoppers in your area to shop and deliver groceries from your favorite stores in a single order. Products you love from local stores, hand-selected based on your preferences. Many items may be delivered in as little as an hour. Instacart helps to save you money on your favorite items and recommends new products that you might also love. Instacart, the most convenient way to shop. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at clementemuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's clementemuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right, so those were great as usual.
Bam, 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 bam.
Don't you think?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ray.
Yes.
Check it out.
Ooh, okay.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
No, we're not doing that.
What are you saying?
So, you know what I was going to say?
No.
A whole 9 yards with a 9 number. Is our tweet.
Yeah.
And then also it's our Instagram.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's what.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Give us some some listener thoughts.
Listener thoughts.
What's your spooky second parter?
I'm going to tell you.
All right.
I have blood runs cold.
Mm.
And it is also, you know, like everything is a song lyric to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a song lyric. I just can't get it. I can't get what the hell song it is.
Is it from Bat Out of Hell?
No, it isn't. It'll come to me, though.
43 million copies worldwide.
That doesn't seem like that many.
It doesn't. For
remember Skrillex?
Yeah. Blood ran cold.
Blood ran cold. I don't know, man. Has my blood ever run cold? Have I felt so scared that I was chillified? Have I been?
I don't, you, have you?
I don't think so. Like, you know, you get different, everyone's got different reactions, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that sensation, I feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so blood ran cold. This, I'm going to say to you up front here, pretty not too involved.
That's okay.
I traced it to try to find some other examples and uses.
Yeah.
What I did find was the mid-1800s, some say 19th century, a clustering, as we sometimes find, you know, it becomes popular to say, and then it's in print a lot.
Yeah,
a
right.
Surge.
Yep. You learn a new word, you want to use it a bunch.
Yeah. And these fine journalists were no exception. 1860, it was in a newspaper story, which I read part of and is quite gruesome. It was just right there in the daily paper that you get for a penny or whatever.
Yeah.
In 1860, you know.
Yeah.
About a soldier's torture stories.
Jeez.
That's in the Meridian Daily Republican.
Wow.
It's in 1883 in a fictional article in Adam's Sentinel. I don't know where the devil Adams is, but it's okay.
Yeah.
1861, 1873, 1881. I found lots of clusters of the use.
Blood running cold.
Yeah, blood running cold.
Mm-hmm.
Always with that sort of thing. They weren't necessarily scared. In the case of the torture stories, the author was mortified to the point he or she exclaimed that their plasma was of the freezing nature.
My plasma's frozen. We got to be able to say that better, guys. What else you got?
Yeah. I'm going to just fill you in on a more dry of an explanation, which is not at all an explanation for the idiom, because just like scare the pants off of you and... Mm-hmm. This one is slim pickings.
Yeah.
There's a medieval idea of the four humors of the body. Melancholy, which I think is like a vast majority of my makeup.
We got a lot of that going on, sure.
Phlegm.
Okay.
Blood. And choler.
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 So.
Choler? Or color?
C-H-O-L-E-R.
Choler, okay.
That's what I said.
Yeah, no, I'm just making sure.
And choler being the bile, anger, or that word, or irascibility.
Irascibility.
Once supposed to arise from excess of bile. Wow.
Yeah.
So if you were full of,
You were full of,
Yeah.
Boop.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
So I go on. Blood was known as the hot and moist element, and when horror or fear made the blood cold, it was unable to fulfill its function of supplying the body with vital heat or energy.
Okay, sure.
I mean, that's sort of defining the divine with its own self.
Mm.
Yeah. But dear beloved listener, this is the end of this road. We were on Highway 3A,
yeah,
and then we're in the forest.
Here we are. Blood ran cold.
Yeah, and it's with great sadness and shame that I leave it at that. But blood ran cold. When you're saying that, you aren't really, there's not a great depth of that as an idiom. It is just, I got scared and I froze up.
And I feel cold.
I feel cold.
Yeah. Sometimes it do be like that.
And this is that way, like that. And right. So you.
Well, I have to wrap this up because I'm headed out to my graveyard shift.
Oh.
Which is what I have. I don't actually have a graveyard shift.
No.
No.
And that wouldn't start for hours.
Yeah, it's pretty early. Or maybe it's late. We don't know when we're recording this.
Mm-mm.
Graveyard shift. Which basically just means to us late overnight shift, right? Working shift.
Yeah, my very first real job at age 15 was at Old Southern Pancake House. I worked 11 to 7 overnight, washing dishes. Yeah.
That's a graveyard shift.
Yeah, it's a graveyard shift.
Bam. So the legend goes that an old-timey England, well, old-timey English cemeteries, they would run out of space, you know?
Yeah.
So they had to dig up bodies to make room to bury the recently deceased. And after they dig up these coffins, exhume, if you will, which I love that word.
Yeah.
They would take the coffins to a bone house who would then reuse... I don't know what the bone house did. I didn't go in. I'm like, are you guys like saving skeletons to put in people's closets? So at the bone house... they would discover, once they opened up these coffins, that every so often, they would find scratch marks on the inside.
Come on.
So folks start to wonder, perhaps we're burying some of these people alive. And they think, well, what do we do? We should not do that. It seems bad. So they use their wits and ideas and think, maybe, how can we alert people if someone below has been buried alive? What if we tie a string around the wrist of the person, like pre-burial, and then after they're buried, we'll attach the other end of the string to maybe a bell up on top side, if you will, so that if, in case that the people were in a coma or, you know, whatever, passed out, I guess, and they were prematurely buried, they could shake their wrist and perhaps ring a bell above on the surface. But who would they alert? They would need someone to sit in the graveyard and listen for the bells of the freshly interred, right?
Sure, somebody.
But no, that's not the case at all.
I knew it. Even the scratch mark sounds suspicious.
That's the thing. And this is where we end up in these roads all the time, everybody. And we try to follow the evidence because we want to be scientific. You know, I want to be truthful. I don't want to mislead, but I do. And we throw in our own opinions all the time, but like these things did happen. So to say that but people cast them out as definitions because there's no direct evidence. You know what I mean? So there's no evidence that these folks were ever referred to as graveyard workers or graveyard shifts. And there's not even that many cases of what people would refer to as dead ringers and things like that, which is also not true. Some people were concerned about this, and some folks did rig up systems in these instances, but it wasn't widely spread, and it wasn't widely spread enough to have terms that referred to it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So there's no evidence of these things being the case. It seems that the evidence, I like how Phrase Finder, Gary Martin of Phrase Finder, puts it, plausibility and truth are only distant relatives, which is kind of what this is. Like, it makes sense that it could arise from that and that those phrases could be that, but there really isn't that much evidence that points it directly to there.
Yes.
It seems like the graveyard shift / graveyard watch just was the name of that late / early work shift from midnight to 8 a.m. or, like you said, 11 to 7. The name came about in the 1800s, but there's no, again, direct evidence that that phrase had any literal connection to anyone watching over graveyards or making sure people weren't buried alive in graveyards. Just that these shifts would take place in the middle of the night when things are, you know, empty and quiet and lonely and, you know, spooky, like a graveyard.
Yeah.
So one of the first instances found in print is May 15th, 1895, in a New Albany Evening Tribune, which is in a story about coal mining. Coal miners. Starts off by saying it was dismal enough to be on the graveyard shift. In 1897, same thing, policemen talking about working the graveyard shift overnight. And then we get to Our Life, Our Love, and Our Lady, as always, a glossary of sea terms in 1927. They refer to it as graveyard watch, which is the middle watch, 12 to 4 a.m. And they describe it as because of the number of disasters that occur at this time. But more folks seem to say, again, because of its the silence and the loneliness and the emptiness of the ship at that hour.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of that feeling of emptiness and loneliness, which is, you know, what graveyards feel like. They feel quiet and solemn. So, well, it would be nice to have the colorful definition, and it's plausible. We can't specifically say that that's the case. And it's, I guess, not the case. But it's so colorful, and I want it to be the case. Because, again, like we are in our language and our thoughts, we love the lore. We love the superstition. It just appeals so much to...
No, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
It happened. Those were things. There were things called safety coffins that were invented that had the bells and that would allow air into these boxes. It just, yeah.
It's like if the person isn't decomposing, maybe you don't bury him yet.
Well, we're new. We didn't do autopsies, I'd imagine, stuff like that. I mean...
Well, that would have finished the job.
Yeah. So while we probably did bury people alive, and we did.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. We can't for sure say that folks who were concerned about this hired workers to watch over their graves in the evening to make sure they weren't buried alive.
And I would also guess that, I mean, once, is it crazy? You know, once electric lights were available, machinery,
mm-hmm.
that made the ability to work around the clock more easily mm-hmm. done, right?
Sure.
So wouldn't we maybe, is that what you could trace it back to? Were you in the 1920s before that electric lights would have been everywhere, factories, and then you could just work around the clock?
I mean, that's certainly what it became. I mean, yeah, it became synonymous with that factory work, like you said, around the clock work. You know, you were on swing shifts, so someone had a daylight shift, someone had an afternoon shift, someone had a graveyard shift. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that just became those things from what we...
And before then, you just couldn't see, so nobody could work.
No, well, you had to work. I mean, it sounds like they were coal mining and doing things like that, and they're, you know, watching ships, so they were very dark and very isolated and very, you know, I'd imagine empty in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
The rest of us put the curfew on and went to bed.
Right. Get that cover fire on, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah. Graveyard shift. I wish it were the fun one.
It could be.
It exists. That thing does exist. People were buried alive, folks, so that's cool, I guess.
There's somebody out there that has a safety coffin as a coffee table, you know? It's just in their house. Yeah.
I wonder if there's one at the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia.
They know this stuff, and they just love this stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know?
Cool. Perhaps the Trundle Manor has one. I don't know.
Trundle Bed.
Trundle Manor.
Is in the Trundle Manor.
I don't know if they have a Trundle Bed.
Ha! But that's our Spooky 2.
Spooky 2-ky.
We say it with shaky voice.
Ooh.
And I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms. I did a harmony.
That was nice.
It wasn't a great harmony.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyu@wholenineyards.org. That's heyu@wholenineyards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.